The tax man's taken all my dough and left me in my stately home, blazing on a sunny afternoon. And I can't sail my yacht, he's taken everything I got. All I've got's this sunny afternoon.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Scott Klinger, who is the Tax Policy Director for Business for Shared Prosperity. He's a chartered financial analyst and previously worked as a security analyst and portfolio manager for Walden Asset Management. He's one of the authors of a recent report, Executive Excess 2011, The Massive CEO Rewards for Tax Dodging. Welcome to Background Briefing, Scott Klinger.
Thank you, Ian.
And the president recently came out with a plan to revamp taxes, particularly corporate taxes. I noticed that Mitt Romney is on the campaign trail making an argument that the reason that there's so much corporate money offshore is because they don't pay taxes, but they pay taxes on onshore money. And he's saying it's a disincentive if you pay taxes in the United States and you don't pay them abroad. So what's he saying there?
Well, U.S. companies do pay taxes on your U.S. profits, and they've become very skillful at disguising their U.S. profits as if they were earned overseas, particularly in tax haven countries, which are about 50 countries around the world, sometimes little island nations that offer very low or even no tax rate, no tax on corporate income.
So how would you then repatriate this capital?
So companies, as long as they earn money overseas, or if they transfer their U.S. profits overseas, they don't pay U.S. tax on it until they bring the money back, which is what you just referred to as repatriation. They regular U.S. tax on it.
Which is what Romney's arguing is a disincentive. If you get punished for bringing money back to the United States, that was his argument. And I guess, frankly, doesn't that resonate with the average voter?
Well, I think it probably does, but that there's a lot of misinformation in it. First of all, we have a tax system, corporate tax system, that's badly broken. And corporations in general pay nothing like the 35% corporate rate that we often hear about. In fact, the Congressional Budget Office did a study a couple weeks ago and found last year corporations paid just 12% of their income in taxes, the lowest tax rate in 40 years in this country, and much lower than companies in Europe or Asia generally pay.
So one of the arguments that I heard that attended the president's announcement of reforming corporate taxes was essentially that why give another tax break? I mean, that seems to be the essential problem here, isn't it? That we have a kind of economic illiteracy in the country where a lot of people think that the deficits are terrible things and we have to cut the debt, yet the evidence of austerity in Europe indicates the opposite. And the other canard seems to be the idea that if you relieve the wealthy and the corporations of their tax burden, that creates jobs, that they're the job creators. So can you tell me, Scott, why it is that these canards aren't effectively challenged and persist?
Well, I think that unfortunately we've become very susceptible to soundbite politics and these easy phrases like job creators. The reality is that U.S. corporations have never been better than they are right now. They're reporting record earnings. They're sitting on more than $2 trillion, with a T, in cash, and they could create hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of jobs tomorrow if they wanted to. They have that much money in the bank. The problem isn't that their taxes are too high. The problem is that they don't have any consumer demand to justify those investments. And it's a chicken and egg problem. When companies start to hire and create jobs, then consumers will feel more confident and begin to purchase things again. So, we really don't see any connection between this argument that corporations are making, that their competitive advantage is affected by U.S. taxes. Warren Buffett was recently in the news in the last day or two talking about the fact that the U.S. Corporate profits as a share of our total economy are the highest they've been in 50 years. And at the same time, corporate tax contributions corporate taxes as a percent of the economy are the lowest they've been in 50 years. So we have this widespread, and that is going into CEOs' pockets and into shareholders' dividends and capital gains.
Well, I understand that this huge surplus of corporate profits that you mentioned, the trillions, are in fact being used to buy back stock, which then raises the price of the stock and makes the CEO look good, and therefore he can claim more money. Isn't that what's going on?
That's right. That's certainly one big piece of the way the money is being used.
So let me try and understand then why corporate America is sitting on all this money. They have record profits, record low taxes, and yet they're talking about being too heavily taxed. And you're saying that nothing's going to improve until there's some demand. It's not that they are getting taxed too much. It's that the people out there don't have any spare change to buy their products. You would think that corporate America would be concerned enough to want to do something about it. But what are they doing? Are they sort of holding back, sitting on their coffers in order for Romney to get elected? What's their strategy here? What explains the fact that they don't have some kind of patriotic impulse to want to improve the American economy so that the average American has some purchasing power to buy their products?
Well, I would respectfully disagree with the notion of a patriotic impulse. Corporations are not people, contrary to what Mr. Romney said, and I don't believe they have impulses. Most of these companies are global businesses. They don't think of their allegiances to any particular place or community, and that's different from what it once was, you know, a few decades ago. When I was a kid, companies saw themselves as rooted in a particular place, and they took care of those places. That is much less the case today. They're very much concerned about profits. So one answer is to help them, is to force them to pay the taxes that they're supposed to pay. And there's a couple of bills in Congress. One that our small business owner members support is the Cut Loopholes Act that was recently introduced by Senator Carl Levin and Senator Kent Conrad from North Dakota. And that would close some of these offshore tax haven loopholes. It would eliminate other loopholes that corporations get, such as when they pay their executives in stock options, they get to deduct huge amounts, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars off of their tax bill for those stock options that overcompensate CEOs. There's 42 corporate loopholes that passed that expired at the end of the last Congress in what's called the Corporate Extenders Act. And Congress right now is considering extending all of those 42 loopholes. Some of them are decent. Some of them are good economic policy. Many of them are not. And these are things we don't read about in our papers and don't you know, as you said, don't have the knowledge we need to be good, active citizens.
Again, I'm speaking with Scott Klinger, who is the Tax Policy Director for Business for Shared Prosperity. He's a chartered financial analyst and previously worked as a security analyst and portfolio manager for Walden Asset Management. And he's one of the authors of a recent report, Executive Excess 2011, The Massive CEO Rewards for Tax Dodging. So, what then is the president just sort of playing politics here with his proposal? On the one hand, he is trying to neutralize the constant Republican canard of big government spending by suggesting that there ought to be tax cuts, but at the same time closing loopholes. It's pretty much the same argument he's had with tax policy in general. What's your sense of why he sort of wants it both ways?
Well, I think there are some fairly good things in the president's principles that he outlined. I wouldn't say he's yet put forth a proposal because it's very much lacking in any details that can be evaluated. But some of his principles are that companies should pay taxes on their foreign earnings. They shouldn't be able to house hundreds of billions of dollars in tax havens, countries around the world. They should pay some global minimum tax. The problem is he hasn't specified what rate that is, and if that rate is too low, then that becomes a permanent tax holiday, tax cut for corporations, and we'll see even more money shift to those countries. If it's a very high rate, then that could actually end up closing some of those tax havens and making corporations pay the taxes that they're intended to pay. Europe, by the way, has these sorts of laws. The UK, France, Germany all have laws that require companies to pay some minimum level of tax on their foreign income. It's usually pegged as a percentage of their national tax, and that would work in this country. But the president has not yet put forth a number on that. So those kinds of things are good. The biggest problem we have with his tax plan is he is wanting it to be what he says is revenue neutral, in which any additional taxes that are raised would be put into new tax cuts and tax incentives for corporations. This country and this country's businesses need more investment. We need investment in basic research. We need desperately need investment in infrastructure, in job creation. And we're not going to get there if corporations are paying no more than the historically low level in taxes that they're paying today.
So do you think American corporations are not interested in the 99%? In other words, arguably we have become a kind of oligarchy now, ruled by corporate plutonomy and oligarchy. Arguably our democracy itself is up for question. And we talked earlier about, when I used the word patriotic, you pointed out this absurdity of that notion or the naivety of that notion that because corporations are global, it sort of takes you back to Adam Smith's notion that capital transcends sovereignty. Is there any corporate responsibility out there in terms of responding to the 99% versus the 1%? I mean, I would think that a plutonomy or an oligarchy is unsustainable in the long run because the rich, even though they've got so much money, aren't sufficient to create to sustain an economy that's, I think, 70% dependent upon on consumer spending. Don't you have to trickle down a little bit to the average people so that they can buy your products? I'm going back to that.
Well, I think that's absolutely right, Ian, and I think that's the tension and the problem is between short-term thinking, how are we going to get our profits for next quarter, and long-term thinking about what is this country going to look like when people are up to their eyeballs in debt and don't have adequate jobs, and the jobs they do have are paying less than they used to. Those are not conditions that are healthy for an economy, as you said, that's based on consumer spending. And it's not just this country that corporations need to worry. That story is playing out in many, if not most, countries around the world. So I think the corporations are being very short-sighted when they're not creating the resources for government to invest in good education and good infrastructure. These are the things that make economies competitive. These are the things that we're losing to places like Korea and China, where they're investing massively in educating their citizens and building great transportation networks and great infrastructure to help their businesses succeed.
But do you think that the fact that a presidential candidate in Rick Santorum can make a statement that the president is a snob because he wants American kids to go to college, and that Santorum thinks that going to college is a bad idea? He also thinks that homeschooling is a good idea. And that public education, I think by extension, you assume he doesn't think much of public education or the need for it. Is there a constituency in this country, in the business world, that would reflect Santorum's thinking? In other words, we don't need a skilled, educated workforce because of the globalized economy. We've already stripped our manufacturing base. We basically just want low-wage workers who are passive and will accept whatever we decide to pay them.
Well, I think the evidence is that, not what I think or what you think, but that other countries of the world definitely think that education is the way to advance their businesses and their economies. We see all around the world countries investing far more and significant resources in preparing their young for careers, whether that's through college or through good trade schools or whatever the education is. But education is certainly key. And, I think the United States has lost that, has stepped away from it. And one of the things you mentioned, low wages, there was a new report that just came out that looked at the percentage of low-wage jobs in countries. And the United States, among industrialized countries, has the second highest share of low-wage jobs in its economy, and the only country that's worse is Korea, South Korea. And one of the things that has just been happening, I don't know if your listeners are aware, but Caterpillar has just gone through a nasty strike in Canada and is closing down a plant and moving it back to, I believe, Indiana, because it's now a low-wage, non-union state, and they can save money. So the U.S. is gaining some jobs back because we've become the low-wage place to do business. And, you know, we know from the auto factories that we're celebrating are coming back, that the new workers being hired there are making half of what folks were making a few years ago when the factories were all closing.
Actually, less than half, $14 an hour is the entry.
Yeah, compared to 35 or 40, right?
Yeah. So it's and so Mitch Daniels, the governor of Indiana, who just signed the right to work law, he's already getting results.
Right, because the U.S. is now the low wage place to do business. And that's not good for business, though, either, because those workers will be living paycheck to paycheck instead of having some disposable income that they can spend on things that corporations might have to sell.
I'm mystified as to why anybody would consider this social engineering beneficial. What's the thinking here? Is it just greed that the CEOs want to take all the money and they just don't want to share it? Or is this some new, as I was suggesting earlier, some idea that in order to be competitive in the globalized economy, we got to turn our American workers into Bangladeshis and Sri Lankans?
Well, I think that a big piece of the problem is that many of us have given up our sense of our own story and where it is we fit in this grand economy. And too many people have embraced the notion that their well-being is based on the well-being of corporations. So when we hear things like taxing corporations is going to create jobs or high taxes on corporations make them uncompetitive, we become fearful instead of examining what's really going on. And let's look around and see, you know, who's doing really well in this economy. I mean, it's not my neighbors. It's not most people that live here in Baltimore. It's the biggest businesses, the most powerful businesses. It's not the small community restaurant or community dry cleaner. They're struggling. But there's a lot, you know, huge amounts of wealth that's being created and redistributed upward in this society. And that's something I think we all need to come to grips with.
But given the power of corporations and now because of the Supreme Court Citizens United decision, their ability to buy our politics has even greater potential than they had before. And we're starting to see in this election cycle how a handful of billionaires are essentially through super PACs are choosing our political leaders, at least if we are to have a Republican president in the next 4 years. So just in closing, I'm trying to get a sense of how these candidates like Santorum and Romney talk about reviving the middle class. At the same time, the policies and the practices of the corporations, who, after all, are the real influence in our politics and particularly in the Republican Party, this is not the old American dream anymore, is it? We're talking about essentially making the people like Romney, who are practitioners of extracting wealth from companies and concentrating wealth amongst the elite and then stripping companies of workers. And then this right to work stuff that's just happened in Indiana and with the UAW deal with General Motors and Chrysler lowering their wages, that seems to be the way we're heading, right? We're heading into a future that doesn't include the middle class.
That's absolutely right. Unless we do something pretty quick, we're heading for a permanent aristocracy. Both Santorum and Romney's tax plans and economic plans would massively shift wealth to those at the top, the biggest corporations and the wealthiest families. In fact, they'd be their tax plans would be the Bush tax cuts on steroids. They'd generate even more savings and wealth for those at the very top of the economic ladder.
Well, Scott Klinger, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Scott Klinger, who is the Tax Policy Director for Business for Shared Prosperity. He is a chartered financial analyst and previously worked as a security analyst and portfolio manager at Walden Asset Management. He's one of the authors of a recent report, Executive Excess 2011, The Massive CEO Rewards for Tax Dodging. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with a retired president of UAW local in Michigan about the race there and what really happened with the so-called bailouts.